Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program as we come your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We do stream live at richarddugan.com. The radio show's page is the archives location where we put these podcasts, and we encourage you to go there and check out the wide and diverse selection of programs we've done over the last 10-plus years. It still blows me away that it's been that long, and we encourage you to check out our guests. We link to their websites. We'll be giving you the link to our guests' website shortly, telling you all about what this guest has to offer to us in the way of a practical guide to multidimensional transformation. We're going to be talking about, this is interesting, waking up in 5D, and we're going to find out what that means with our guest who is on the line with us via Skype, Maureen J. St. Germain. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
My pleasure. It's fun to be with you.
I like the image you have on the front cover of the book. What specific, can you describe that to us? At least, what is it?
It's a piece of art done by a famous artist named Andre Balog, who does what I call sacred geometry, or symbols that are symmetrical. And he has an eye for color and light. And so he does these drawings, and the book company, he's a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. So the book company, I sent them to his website, and they picked the one they liked, and the rest is history.
Some folks might be able to equate it to loosely to the image of the flower of life, that geometrical circular form that people see all over the place. Really, not only the colors, but also the design itself is very unique and very eye-catching in that regard. So we're going to be talking about waking up in 5D. Obviously, people know 3D, three-dimensional, four-dimensional, fifth-dimensional. I had a great conversation many years ago with a guest on this program. He was a physicist, and he had written a book about the fifth dimension. And he says, I can prove to you the existence of the first three dimensions, height, width, depth. I can show you evidence of it. I cannot show you evidence of the fourth dimension, but I can show you effects of it. He then went on to describe to me the fifth dimension. We were having a little walk here in town, and I stopped him and I said, your description of the fifth dimension can only be summarized in basically one word that most people would recognize. And again, this is coming from a physicist. I said, the only word I can come up with to describe what you've just shared as the fifth dimension is God. Is that your definition, shall we say, or your concept of, or your discoveries of the fifth dimension?
That's so interesting. I was expecting you to say heaven, because that's what I tell people, that the fifth dimension is our traditional view of what heaven would be like or would be. We have a level of connection with the divine that is clear and pure. And this is very interesting, but just like when babies are born, they can't walk or talk, but when they're adults, they can. When we first become fifth dimensional, we're just babies at it. So although we have the connection, we don't always understand it, or we have the experiences, but we don't understand what's happening. So becoming fifth dimensional is a process. So even though we're at a place where the fifth dimension is available for people to express and to be fifth dimensional, the best description would be to say, whatever your traditional belief system taught you about heaven, that's probably the fifth dimension. And there's more, but that's a basic idea.
Sure. And of course, you know, a lot of folks, you know, who are older, such as myself, we are familiar, obviously, with the musical group, The Fifth Dimension, and their music of the 60s and 70s. And I always found it interesting, and this is sort of a side note, if you will. I always found it very interesting. I'm familiar with astrology, for example, and the direction of the zodiac, okay? And then, of course, hearing the more metaphysical aspects of Christianity. And we were going from the Piscean Age to the Aquarian Age. And they're opposite. The zodiac goes one direction, Aquarius to Pisces, but when we're going from one age to the next, at least as far as I was learning, we were going from the Piscean to the Aquarian Age. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wait a minute, how does that work? I don't understand that. But what I do understand and am trying to get a greater grasp on is this aspect of heaven. And of course, the connection with the divine, waking up in a 5D, which is the title of your book. And again, this is a practical guide to multidimensional transformation. I know that we have transformed the 3D world, our physical world, in oh so many ways, for the good and the not so good.
Mm.
The fourth dimension, which many people view as time, is more of a human construct. We made that up in our heads. We just went through the process across the globe over the course of the end of October and early November of transitioning from daylight saving time. Folks, there is no S on saving. In Europe and in the United States, to standard time. God knows what that means, other than the fact that in the winter time or fall, we fall back. So we, as they say, lose an hour. And then, of course, spring forward, we gain an hour. We don't gain or lose anything, technically speaking. The sun will still rise and set. Basically, the cycles haven't changed. They haven't shifted. They haven't moved and that type of stuff. And our chickens, by the way, which we have, they don't care. Nor do they know. And if they did know, they wouldn't care.
And the rooster doesn't care either.
And the rooster doesn't care. When the sun starts coming up over the horizon, he starts making noise. But when we start talking about the fifth dimension, you've heard this phrase many times, I'm sure, that you know we create our own heaven or hell right here. So what's the difference here? What is that multidimensional transformation you're talking about that we can experience here in the 3D world?
Okay, so first of all, I want to go back to what you said about the fourth dimension and that it's a construct, and that's exactly what it is. And not only is it a construct, but it is a artificial aligning of events in order for us to experience more, to have more comprehension of what we're doing. So even though the physicists might tell you that fourth dimension is time, I have been told by my guides that time is a construct, exactly as you said. So even when you don't know, you know, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of cute because it's a great chant, you know, everything you know.
Absolutely, yes.
So I start out with that, and I have some amusement there because I have manipulated time. And it's a very interesting concept. I'll dive into that a little bit, but then I want to go back to the bigger question at hand. fourth dimension is a zone of transition. I tell people it's the place you go to get somewhere else, like an airport or like Grand Central Station. Nobody wants to spend the night there. And so a choice to be more connected to who you really are, to the world around you, makes you more divine. I mean, if you're more sensitive to the plants or to the weather or to the people around you or to the animals, then you're more plugged in to the energy that drives everything. The energy of time is so malleable that you can literally bend time by our standards. And we're not really bending time. We're just bending our experience of it because we're able to shift and change the environment in a way that allows us to get where we need to go and arrive at a certain point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting to me is there are things that keep people locked in time, and that's anything that we do as a mass consciousness type behavior. Everyone has coffee in the morning. Everyone likes to watch the news or read the newspaper to find out what's going on in the world. People watch football games or soccer games en masse. All of those things pull us into mass consciousness. And then the language we use, which is one of the things I found out initially, for me personally, the experience of becoming fifth dimensional was largely me having experiences. And because I am a direct channel, I was able to ask what's going on. And I was told very specifically. So the fifth dimensional energy is something that we're all becoming. And when I first started becoming fifth dimensional, I would ask, where did my stuff go that had disappeared? Now, initially, when my stuff disappeared, I thought, oh, it's like monkeys in space. You know, we're sending the monkeys ahead. I'm sending my stuff ahead, thinking that I was just sending my stuff ahead and I would eventually catch up with it. But what I found out one day when I asked the what question, and this is what I tell people now, only ask the what question. It's the only one worth asking. When I asked what was going on, I was told, Maureen, you were in a higher dimension when you put that stuff down. And that had not occurred to me. So that broadened my awareness. And I had been, you know, I was teaching a class every single weekend for many, many years, for almost 20 years. So I would take this information to my classes and they'd say, are you having stuff disappear? They'd all say yes. And I'd say, well, you can ask for it to come back. But not only that, if your stuff is disappearing like mine and then it's turning up again at the same exact place that you knew you put it that was not there temporarily, that means that you also are shifting dimensionally. And the dimensions are nested like Russian dolls. So from fifth dimension, you can participate and see third, but in third dimension, you cannot see up to fifth. How am I doing so far?
Well, so I very good. I thought you were going to continue there. I can't resist the joke. The Russians are involved in this too. Anyway,
That's cute.
I find it fascinating that we seem like we were heading in a really good direction for a long time. And again, having to use the human construct of time. In the last 3 years, in a manner of speaking, for some of us who, again, we're feeling as though, hey, we're moving forward. We're the you know, the vibrations are we're learning about our connectedness, and we seem like we're starting to make some changes in taking care of ourselves and our planet, and raising the consciousness of the planet, and so forth. And then it seems like in the last 3 years, it all went to hell. As if the powers that be, I don't care. I'm more concerned with the 3D world. I don't care about the fourth or fifth or sixth or 12th or 55th dimensions. I only care about the 3D. That's all that matters.
Well, the powers that be are now the powers that were. And this is the temper tantrum of a child who's not going to get his way. So when you see a child that's like throwing a fit, making a big scene, you know very well that that's the end of the line for them and that that's going to come to a halt. And that's what we're seeing. So these machinations that we're seeing around us in every category are a direct result of an attempt to pull us in. Now, again, there's something else I wanted to get into, and I was going to go back and I thought, oh, I've been talking too long, and I was worried about that. So I
Never,
apologize.
don't ever worry about that. Not on this program, anyway.
Okay, good. So the thing that I began to notice, you know how when people use either irreverent language or inappropriate language, you kind of cringe on the inside and you don't always speak up because it, you know, it doesn't seem like it's the right opportunity. Well, I found myself cringing to words that were what I would call perfectly normal in 3D. But in 5D, you wouldn't use those words. They would push you back into third dimension. And I'll give you some examples. I have to. The reason have to is a 3D phrase is because it locks you into the man or big brother that's going to control you. So I have to pick up the kids on time. I have to meet my boss. I have to get this report done. All of those are implying that something is over you, causing you and requiring you to participate, when in truth, it's not so. I love picking up my kids. I like being on time because then I don't get a late notice. I'm meeting my honey. I'm going to connect with my boss later. I'm having a report. I'm working on a report that's due. You don't have to say, I have to. And that I just did it again, right? I just said, you don't have to say you have to. And so it's very deeply ingrained in our languaging and in our way of speaking. So one of the things that I did is I made a list of the words that were making me cringe and the words that I felt were really polarized. And these next few words are really obvious, like right or wrong. I was betrayed. I was wronged. The truth is good or bad. And all the interview questions except for the what one. And I'll explain that in a second. So the good, bad, right or wrong, all those kinds of words, we need to decide to choose words that claim what we want without making everything else bad or wrong, because that puts us back into polarity. We're compartmentalizing. Oh, you know, I've had that fish before. It's terrible. It's not very good at all. See how I'm like categorizing it, where I could just as easily say, oh, I've had that fish before. It's not a match for me. Yeah. Different energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right or wrong. Well, I champion your right to hold that belief as long as it pleases you. That does not say that you're right or wrong. It just says, I'm not there. I'm not with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might even follow it within, I hope you'll do the same for me. Another way to say what you want without saying that's good or bad is, this is what works for me.
Yeah. I can relate to that.
What I did is I suggested to people, look at this list and banish these words from your everyday language. Choose to let them go. And it's very interesting because we think, oh, well, I can avoid those words. And you don't think those words, but then they come out of your mouth. And the classic example for me was, I was trying to describe when you have a really bad day. And so I said a phrase that's sometimes used to explain that, called a day from blank. Mm-hmm. And I won't use the word.
Okay.
And I was called out on it by my own thought, because I never used it in language. I never used it in everyday talk. But when I was teaching class and I'd say, oh, well, you don't have a bad day, blah, 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 a day like this, then you do this. And one day I was coming off of a plane in my home city, and the agent, it was a small city, so she was also helping with baggage, and she normally does check-in, saw me. And because I've been going there so much, even though she wasn't my friend, she recognized me and said, oh, hi, Maureen, how you doing? And I, without realizing, said, oh, this is my day from blank. Because I got to get back here in 2 hours to catch a flight going to the East Coast. And she looked at me kind of funny, and I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe I said that. So I immediately corrected and said, well, but this is a day of heaven on earth because I'm flying with United. And we both laughed, and I went on my way. Well, I came home to an inch of water on my basement floor. The leak turned out to be between the walls, and they had to drill a hole in the walls to find it. And my neighbor came over. He could have easily been away at his cabin up north. The plumber came on time because of my connection. I was able to tell the plumber where to drill. And then that was also one of the reasons why my bill was so small. And everything was handled. And I had called the airlines and said, you know, can I catch the later flight? And I explained what was going on. And they said, sure, we'll even waive your change fee, because I was a frequent flyer and it was an emergency. So I get home from taking my deposit to the bank. My neighbors put fans in the walls to help dry everything out. Everything's copacetic. The phone rings and it's United. And they said, you know, both of our flights to Chicago are running an hour late. And if you catch the flight you're booked on, you will miss your connection to the East Coast. Is there any way you can catch the earlier flight, which will then, it's now leaving an hour later than it should have? And I said, yeah, I think I can do that, because my suitcase was already packed and ready to go. I'm only 15 minutes from the airport. I'm sitting on the plane and I'm thinking to myself, what the heck? How did I pull that off? What's going on? And I was told, you said you were having a day of heaven on earth. So the next time I had a super jammed up day, I thought, I'm going to ask for a day of heaven on earth. That's pretty cool. So I did. after that day, I said to myself, I'm not waiting until I have a full day. I'm going to ask for this every day. And so can you, and so can our listeners.
You know, I can relate to that completely on two instances specifically. Number one was just a year ago, my wife and I made plans to take a week's vacation, which we hadn't taken either of us for 10 years. And so really looking forward to it. And I've shared this on the program before. We actually were going to go up to spend the night in Yosemite at one of the lodges because we were going to one of these fancy get-togethers called the Bracebridge dinner that they hold every year. Apparently it used to be by lottery, and now it's, you know, whoever reserves first gets the seats. And my wife's been wanting to do it. It's supposedly been on her bucket list. She asked me if I had one, by the way, and I said, no, I really don't have a bucket list. I mean, you know, I just kind of take life as it goes, and you know, I don't have anything. I mean, certainly there are some things I would love to do, you know, people I'd love to interview and places I'd like to go and so on and so forth, but bucket list? I've seen the movie, too. I loved it. Great. But anyway, so we planned this trip to Yosemite. Then we're going to go up to Nevada City, which is just north of the Yosemite entrance there. And then we went up to a small community just north of Nevada City. And we spent three or four days in Nevada City. And this was all before, a week before, the rains came. And they had all the flooding and the devastation of the waters. Matter of fact, the place we were staying, the bed and breakfast, an oak tree fell into the house that we were staying in.
Ooh la la.
I was even looking at the photographs. It looked like it just missed the room we were in. Anyway, I told my wife, I said, our plan, here are our plans, our itinerary. However, with the exception of the Bracebridge, which was a specific day and time, and obviously our reservations at the various locales, we are not going to rush anywhere. We are going to take our time. We are going to relax. We've earned this. We're going to do this. And we headed out on a I think it was Saturday late morning, early afternoon, after taking care of our animals, getting them all secured, you know. And we didn't rush anywhere. We actually got on the 99 going north towards Yosemite, and the traffic was just backed up. It was unbelievable. And we were both starting to feel stressed and thinking, this is not conducive to the start of a good vacation. So immediately we found the first off-ramp. We got off. I recalibrated the GPS to avoid highways. And we went through some of the most beautiful farmlands and countryside I have seen in years. It was absolutely gorgeous. It took an extra hour, but it didn't matter. We still got to, we got to our destination in Yosemite after dark, and we started seeing some snow on the sides of the road as we got there. But it was beautiful. I mean, it was absolutely, and the entire trip went along the same path of no stress, no muss, no fuss. I mean, your experience there in that particular sequence in the space of less than a day, literally a few hours, and the next thing you know, wow, how I look back at the quote-unquote devastation and the chaos that I went through, and I'm here. Wow, how did... you know, somebody looking out for me? Was I born under a lucky star? Did I, you know, is my karma really working for me? I mean, you start questioning how this can be. And I guess that's the one question, and I know you sort of addressed it, that folks are asking, and that is, how can I do that all the time? How can I face these challenges ahead? Okay. This list of stuff that's got deadlines and timelines and people who are counting on me, blah, 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 blah. And I can keep my blood pressure at a normal rate, and I can keep my sanity and so on and so on and so on, and come out the other side going, wow, that wasn't that bad. That was pretty good. I could do that again, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Well, you announced you were going to make sure that we were going to relax and it was going to be fun and easy. And that's another thing a person can say, you know, I'm choosing fun and easy. You know, someone says, oh, yeah, well, that's going to be hard. You know, I've done that before and that's really hard. And to just respond with, well, I think I'll do it fun and easy. To just respond with enthusiasm, you know, thanks for your support. I appreciate it. I'm choosing fun and easy. And all you're doing is setting the matrix. It's like setting the table. You can put the regular china on or the good china. And choosing fun and easy means you're choosing 5D. And there's another thing I do for people, and I teach them, start announcing when you go to bed, as you're climbing into bed, you're putting your head on the pillow, I'm waking up in 5D. And that changes the energy. You feel good when you wake up. You know, you get up. You know, a lot of people, they get up and they start moving right away, but I usually get up and sit on the bed for a second before I stand up. And I always feel like, I'm feeling pretty good. And it's like, that's cool. It's like this umbrella that comes over me, and then that energy stays with me the whole day. And it's interesting because it allows a person to see the joy and the humor in people's behaviors. You know, when somebody does something inappropriate, you don't find yourself reacting. You're more like Neo in the first Matrix movie, where you're sidestepping it and you're noticing it's going by, but it's not hitting you and it's not making you upset. And then later you might say, you know, your 5-year-old was out the other day when you said such and such. And it's done in a moment when there's no stress, no hassle, and the person can hear you. You know, when their 5-year-old is out, they're usually not listening to you.
No, they're not. No, they're not. I don't have a 5-year-old, but I do have animals. I have a dog and two dogs, actually, and 6 cats, and they don't always listen. As a matter of fact, most of the time, they don't care what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
But life goes on, and it's one of those things that is, again, it is profound in the sense that one of the things that my wife and I are learning, and she's been around animals a lot longer than I have, is to work at connecting with them in the sense to the degree that we begin to understand why they're doing what they're doing. There is no behavior they exhibit that doesn't have a reason. And our job, our task that we've taken on, is to try to understand why they're doing it. And we don't discipline the animals in that in from that perspective either. You know, if my dog, he goes to the bathroom in the house, there's a reason why. Odds are he was trying to tell us he needed to go outside and we weren't listening. It's not his fault. And I know that the same thing can be said of the events that happen around us. This is not a concept to avoid or to not get emotional, is it?
No, I mean, you're still gonna. Here's the thing that happens. I mean, emotions are important, and that emotions are also in the fourth dimension, and it is polarized. So, you know, if you get caught in your emotion, that's when drama starts. You know, that's when we get involved in our behaviors that keep us locked into it's not fair, you wronged me, I'm hurt, I'm wounded, whatever the drama is. And what happens is when we're in 5D, we just blaze right through that. The pathway to that drama, you don't even notice. It's almost like when you're driving on the freeway and you blaze past an exit and someone says, weren't we going to get off there? And you look around, I didn't even see that exit. So it's like that. You don't even see the drama exit or the fourth dimension exit. You blaze right into fifth. And that's what fourth is really for at this juncture. And fourth is shrinking because we're not needing so much drama, not needing the experiences of the emotions. I tell people you only can experience emotion one time. Every time after that, it's a replay. And sometimes when you replay it, then you add more emotion, but the original experience is only once. And why do we need to keep replaying our pain? And the answer is because we don't feel validated. But feeling validated comes from within. It doesn't come from outside of us. So when we don't feel validated, we're creating that feeling that someone else isn't validating us either, because that's what we attract. So it gets complicated, but the short version is when we decide to be fifth dimensional, we can move through those experiences without reacting, without responding in the typical way. You know, like the time that my stepfather said to me, "Oh, you're just like your mother." And I looked at him and I said, "You know, that's one of the nicest things you've ever said to me." You know, my mother leans over to me and says, "No, honey, I don't think." And I looked at her and I said, "You know, I get to choose how I hear it. He can say whatever he wants, but I get to choose how I hear it." And that's true for all of us. We get to choose how we hear it.
You know, I never thought of it quite like that, but that is absolutely right. And the fact of the matter is that someone, you can have the same phrase said by two different people at two different times in your life. And one time, it's going to just knock your socks off. It's going to rock your world, and you're just going to have to take some time to recover. And another person can say it somewhere else down the road, and, oh, okay.
And you exactly. Just, and you just and move it's on. Often because the person that said it to you the second time is somebody that loves you and is teasing you. And, they're, you know, a lot of times teasing is built upon your own foibles, but it's not meant to hurt, and you can feel the energy of love. And so you don't react. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But what if you didn't need to interpret somebody else's motive and you could choose for yourself how to receive? See, in the old paradigm, there is such a polarity that I'm watching you to see if I have to have my defenses up. And in 5D, we're so plugged in to the divine that, number one, we're not on the attack. It's not if you win, I lose. It's more like I'm watching you so I can make sure you're winning the same as me. I only want a deal or an arrangement between us, a connection, a bargain, whatever it is, right, if you're satisfied.
Well, now this also brings up another point that we talk about quite regularly on this program that I would like to discuss. I want to discuss it in the second half here as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. So I will share that with you in just a moment. Maureen St. Germain is my guest. Her book is called Waking Up in 5D. We'll give you the web address here in just a little bit as well. A Practical Guide to Multidimensional Transformation. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks for staying with us, both myself as well as my guest, Maureen St. Germain. And we're talking about the fifth dimension. We're talking about waking up in the fifth dimension. What I wanted to dive into in regards to A Practical Guide to Multidimensional Transformation has to do with what you were just addressing from one side, from one perspective, that I'd like to address from the other side or the other perspective, and that is the power of words in the context of our day-to-day. As you said in the last segment, at the end of the last segment, that, you know, it's all a matter of our perspective as to how we take those words in. How about living more consciously to decide to be more conscious of the words we're putting out that will affect people?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, but when you have this fifth dimensional energy that you're holding and you're consciously saying, I'm choosing to wake up in 5D, I want to be 5D, and, you know, you claim a day of heaven on earth, which is also like 5D, I'm claiming that I am in heaven on earth. And that's what we're doing. We're bringing heaven to earth so that we won't have to die to ascend. We won't have to die to become our perfected self. So what happens is, before I open my mouth, I'm aware of where you're at, and I don't need to hit below the belt, as they would say. I don't even have an attraction to it. It doesn't even come up. It's like that missed exit. You don't notice, and you're only hearing and seeing what that person needs. And it's a unique quality. But once you decide to wake up in 5D, you actually are able to sense when a person needs a boost and when a person can be acknowledged for what they're doing because no one else is acknowledging them. And so what happens is you become the other person. It's actually like you vacillate with that other person. You know, my friend Danyon Brinkley, who was struck by lightning and died three different times struck by lightning. You know, they think he'd get it the first time. And each time he had to go through what they call a life review. And he was an assassin at one point. So he felt the feelings of the man that he shot. He felt the feelings of the man's wife. And so all of that became his new reality. So when he finally did come back to his body, and it took him like a year to 2 years to really start to function normally, he remembered what it was like to be the guy on the receiving end. And he knew that it was possible to feel all of that. In fifth dimension, you don't necessarily have a cognizant, at least in the early stages. Again, remember, fifth dimension is also a process where we start out as babies and we become the adults, the mature version. And then we start to shift again. But initially, even without knowing how you know this person needs a boost, or you respond to someone and you realize that they're in a certain place. And so your response isn't your typical one. You'll open your mouth, and instead of saying something that was maybe more sharp or more direct, you hear yourself saying it in a more gentle way. And you think later, whoa, wonder how that happened. I don't, you know, and so you're actually setting up, it's like wearing a uniform, okay? When you wear a uniform, it changes your behavior. And it's a known fact, for example, that children that wear uniforms to school are better behaved, you know, and the uniform is treated with respect because students know that the uniform costs money and that they have to take good care of it and its appearance is important. So they conduct themselves differently than they do when they have other kinds of clothes on. So the uniform of being 5D is what we're asking for, and we're putting it on even if we're not 5D yet. And it literally tempers our behaviors. So you don't have to worry as much about sticking your foot in your mouth.
Well, I can certainly understand how that would be if you it's often been said that the clothes make the man, and that whenever I have dressed up, and I'm literally speaking a suit and tie. Now, I've never worn the only time I wore a three-piece suit was a corduroy suit that I wore for a music group that I was in high school. That was the only time, that was the uniform. But whenever I put on a suit and tie and I go somewhere, whether it's out on an evening or if it's in relation to a job or whatever, I feel differently. Ergo, I speak a little differently. All right. I want to present myself in a different light than if I was wearing the traditional office wear of Santa Barbara, winter and summer, flip-flop shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, which has always grated on me, because when I think about business, I think, you know, at least wear a dress shirt and tuck the sucker in, will you please? That's the other thing that drives me nuts, is I see people walking around and they have this beautiful dress shirt on and they're wearing slacks or sometimes nice-looking jeans, but the tails are out.
Yeah.
But see, that's my perception of the way that it ought to be. Okay. It goes along with your shoe.
Polished.
Yeah, exactly. Because I learned many years ago from one of my employers that presentation is everything. Now, his conversation with me about that had more to do with when we're out doing a live remote and you're setting up the table with the equipment and everything, try to make sure that you can, as best you can, you know, get the wires as straight as you can and get them lined up and maybe taped down and this and that and the other thing. Because when people come across our radio station out in the field, you know, they're going to see a really professional looking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I've taken that to, obviously, the way that I dress as well. Matter of fact, my wife and I just got back from a short little jaunt down to Ventura. Only a couple of days ago. It was just a drive for the day, you know, for a few hours. And she questioned why I was dressing as if I was going to work. I says, well, first of all, I don't have any sneakers, which I do not. I don't own a pair. I wish I did, a little more casual. But I don't have anything that I think would be appropriate for where we're going, even though it's a casual dress place. And I was wearing, you know, nice jeans and all this kind of stuff. But it kind of goes to what you're talking about, is that when you, like you say, when you wake up in that fifth dimension, in that mindset, in that perspective, in that consciousness, the words that come out of your mouth, they're going to be
gems.
They're going to be, yeah.
Yeah, and this is probably a good time to dive a little deeper and talk about swear words. And it's a very interesting thing. When I was in high school, I was hanging out with the in crowd, and everything was cool, except there was one girl who was a member of this group who used the F word every other sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I thought to myself, you know, I don't have to listen to that. And I wasn't angry at her for saying it, and I wasn't feeling superior because I didn't. And I wasn't being yelled at home for anything like that. I had no attraction to it, really. So I thought to myself, you know what? I don't have to listen to this, and I don't have to tell her to stop. I'm just going to stop being friends with them. And I didn't, you know, like turn my back and say, you guys are bad. I simply found other people to have lunch with and hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a conscious decision that I didn't want to keep hearing that all the time because it hurt. It literally hurt my ears. And so one day, a few years ago, I was with a friend, very spiritually awake friend, and one of her clients was there. And the client was a woman that was older than me, and she had a potty mouth. And I couldn't believe it. So when we had dinner together, I said to her, you know, what's with this language you use? Now, you'll notice I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, you're old enough to know better. None of that. I just said, what's with that? And she said, well, you know, they're just words and they really don't mean anything. They're just, you know, words.
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I said, yeah, but the thing is, we all know that the prayers that the Jewish traditions say over and over carry weight because they keep being said over and over. People who pray the Catholic Rosary say those prayers over and over and they get the same benefit.
Mm-hmm.
The Asians who do chants or other mantras over and over, they get a bigger benefit because they're saying the same prayers that somebody else said. Your words are the same words that somebody who meant something really obnoxious
mm-hmm.
used. And you're pulling that energy in when you use that word. Is that what you're wanting to do? Because whether you like it or not, when you choose a word that people have used in a profane way,
yeah.
you're pulling that energy with it.
Yeah.
And that's the reason to not use profanity, not because we're judging profanity in general, but because a good portion of the people who use profanity are using it in a fierce way,
mm-hmm.
and they're very angry, and we don't need that energy.
Well, I have to give you an example of one of my situations where I injured myself, and to the extent where I actually put a dent in my forehead. A small little dent, and it may still be there to this day. I haven't really looked that closely lately. But when I injured myself, I put my hand over my head and the spot where I had injured. And I was in the bathroom at the time, and I started just swearing, you know, just the same word over and over and over and over and over and over again. And my wife came in and says, what's wrong? What are you hurt? Let me see. I said, I'm not finished yet. And I continued the expletive over and over and over again.
Wow.
Until I was finished. And then I said, oh, okay, all right. And I took my hand away, and she took a look, and it wasn't that bad. I didn't need stitches, just little, you know, Neosporin and a bandage, and I was good to go. I was frustrated. I was in pain. I was angry at myself for injuring myself, but it was like I felt as though I needed to get that out of me. I wasn't directing it at anyone. I wasn't even directing it at me. It was more the pain and the frustration. And it was sort of a release for me. Now, that's me. And I find it interesting the way that you phrase this, that there's no judgment. because I, as soon as you started talking about that, my mind went to some of these documentaries regarding comedians who feel that it is acceptable to use what was once called blue language,
mm-hmm.
blue comedy, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of, you know, getting the attention of the audience and mm-hmm. making a statement. I think of Lenny Bruce, for example, one of the earliest, if you will, who basically was doing more than that. He was actually pushing the envelope as far as being allowed to say what he wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't crying fire in a crowded movie house, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was just speaking. And sometimes it wasn't even profanity. It was descriptions that he was telling in his jokes that got him in trouble. So let's, and I absolutely do understand what you are saying as far as waking, again, I'm going to go back to that phrase, waking up in the fifth dimension is going to elicit the gems that will come out of your mouth. But if someone is listening to this program, may have a little bit of trouble with what we're saying as far as that's concerned. Can I reiterate that we are not, if that's what you do in your day-to-day life, those are the words that you use, we're not passing judgment. All we're saying is, look at what you've surrounded, what you're surrounded by in your life, and then take a look at the words that you use from day to day and try to see the connection. Is that a fair observation that we can put out there?
Yes. And also just to understand that we know people use this kind of language in a fierce way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have any desire to be that fierce for any reason.
Right.
So that would be my reason to say, well, you know, doesn't please me anymore, doesn't serve me anymore.
Right.
It's not a match for who I am.
Now, how about these two phrases? Okay. They're neither profane, but they're, again, we're talking about the power of words and choosing the words and so forth. There will be, and it's kind of like the glass is half full, the glass is half empty. I will say to someone who just maybe they just cooked something, you know, wow, that is really good. And the other person at the table says, that's not bad. Now, we're sort of kind of saying the same thing, but we're both mm-hmm. using a different set of words.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, there are times when that phrase, that's not bad, just like, wait a minute, why can't you say that's really good or that's good?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because psychologists have done all kinds of studies, and it's a known fact that the subconscious does not hear the not word. So even though we use it in everyday language, it's a convention that allows us to, you know, to reverse the meaning of a word. In some countries, like China, they don't even have the not word.
Yeah. I find fascinating other languages. There are certain words they don't have, we do. Take a look at their culture.
Yeah. So the that's not bad is really someone who's unwilling to give it up. Come on, you know, like the phrase, come on, give it up, you know, give me the high five or whatever it is. And some people just won't do that. They won't play because they have an opinion about it. They have their own judgment and they're allowed to, by the way. That's a perfectly reasonable thing to choose. But in this case, when we're talking about the not word and saying, you know, that's not bad, they're also saying they're reserving the full approval. So when someone says, oh, that's not bad, they're not saying it's good. They literally are saying it's pretty good or it's good, but there's an issue or something. They never, ever mean it's really good when mm-hmm. they say, oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
They're always reserving something.
Mm-hmm. So to speak, almost saying, man, there's room for improvement. Something along those lines. Interesting. We're talking with Maureen St. Germain, and we are talking about the work that she has out right now, Waking Up in 5D, A Practical Guide to Multidimensional Transformation. I'm curious as to whether or not there are people who are living today in our societies and cultures. And again, I don't know if this is true in other cultures, because I don't live there and don't get the news from those areas, who don't have some of the diseases that we have. I heard this. This was a fascinating description, Maureen. I don't know. I'd like your observations on this as well. I heard it said that those people who have autism and even I think they lumped this in there, Alzheimer's, these two particular conditions, there's absolutely nothing wrong with them. What they are doing or experiencing is exclusively the now moment. And if you think about it from the Alzheimer's description of what happens to a person, they have no recollection of the past, let alone the future. They're just right here, right now. And I thought that was an interesting observation, and that they're actually trying to, they're sort of beginning the process of their transition. That apparently they may have had some fear about the next life, about getting there, and so forth. And so they're testing the waters, and they're going back and forth. And then they go further and further and further. They obviously become more and more distant to us. They don't recognize who we are, if we were a son, a daughter, a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, because they're getting closer and closer to saying, oh, well, this was nice, but I'm going over here now.
Hmm.
And I thought that's a very interesting perspective.
Well, it is very interesting. I've never heard that explained that way, because one of the things we do, we try to get people to realize in 5D, your history doesn't matter. Your history doesn't matter, and my history doesn't matter.
Mm.
It doesn't mean I wouldn't recognize you, but it means that I don't need to remember that you hurt me or I hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we change. In 5D, we don't remember that, so it doesn't stand in the way of our friendship. And this is one of the things I point out in the book. Somebody that you thought was mad at you calls you up and you know, chats with you. You know, I haven't talked to you in forever, blah, blah, blah. They have forgotten that they were the ones that broke it off, or that they were annoyed at you and stopped speaking to you. And that's 5D. And that's the part that's really cool. Now, someone with Alzheimer's wouldn't remember to call you and chat you up.
Right.
And that would be the difference, I think.
Mm-hmm. A good friend of mine and I, my best friend, we traveled from Phoenix to Kansas, to Olathe, Kansas. He was checking out of college, and I was visiting an aunt and uncle of my parents. And we drove out there. I think we were gone for, about a week. And we drove the whole way, went through New Mexico and Texas and so forth, and came back pretty much the same way. And when the trip was all over, the argument began over who owed whom what financially.
Mm.
And it drove a wedge between us for a very short time, until I got to a point where I thought, this is ridiculous. This is as bad as in seventh grade. I kid you not. We had gotten into a little wrestling match, and he had ripped, my new rain jacket got ripped, and the principal called us in, knowing that we were best friends, and basically worked to resolve the situation. And obviously, my mother sewed up the tear, and it was all fine, and we moved on. And it was about as significant when we were in 1980, when we had driven across country, as that torn coat incident. And I got to the point where I said, this just is ridiculous. You know, we went through grade school, high school, and college together, and this is what's going to set us asunder. And so I said, you know what? It doesn't matter. If the only way we're going to be able to move forward is if we agree that neither of us owes the other anything. And we've never talked about it since, other than maybe to laugh about how silly that was. That it was only money, and that the friendship was much more important. And I have to wonder sometimes if that's sort of along akin to that, saying, you know what, that doesn't matter anymore. It's irrelevant. It's what we have right here, right now, the connection that we share right here, right now.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. I personally think that you were probably dealing with someone like a narcissist who absolutely has to win or they die. And that energy of narcissism is something that's a childhood injury. You know, at age 2 or 18 months, they experienced an injury and they don't know how to not have the upper hand. So if you both agree to split the check and you do that, then there's no conflict. But if, you know, he ordered 3 drinks and you didn't order any, and, you know, there's an extra $30 on the bill, you might say, you know, look, you owe me for this. And he might say, well, we always split it. And it is incumbent upon you or whoever is, you know, with that person to say, okay, because that person, anyone who is narcissist in their behavior, can't compromise. They can only win or they die.
Hmm. All right, so where does that place us in this time, in this day and age, in a situation where a lot of people want a particular narcissist to fail and fail big? They want him not to succeed in any way, shape, or form, that he doesn't deserve success. He has not exhibited the character that brings about success other than in his own mind, and that he has done nothing but try to divide and divide and divide, and that there are people who just I don't care. I don't care whether, you know, I want him to fail. Is that self-destructive for those people who feel that way? In spite of the fact that, yeah, they might be impacted by the failure, but they'd rather see him fail and then them dealing with the consequences than him succeed and continue to gloat as a narcissist.
Mm. Well, you know, a narcissist, first of all, a narcissist is a very high-performing individual. So people who are that way generally are not screwing up. They're doing a great job. They might not have great people skills, but they generally are exquisitely capable in business. In fact, that's why it's so hard for businesses to let someone go who is a narcissist, because they perform more work than anybody else. They work harder because there's always watching their back. And so that's general. I mean, you know, if somebody's incompetent, that's another matter. That's not a narcissist. That may be somebody with a big ego that's just plain incompetent, because the narcissist, a real narcissist, is a star performer. It's a very interesting mix of behaviors, but that person is so afraid of failing that they're always working extra hard, harder than everybody else. You know, like they say, women have to work twice as hard to be as good as a man. Well, that's a narcissist. They have to work twice as hard as everybody around them because they do not want anyone to catch them by surprise. They do not want anyone to catch a mistake. They don't, and that's why they catch their own mistakes. So I'm not so sure that the person you've described is a narcissist. They just might be, you know, arrogant or something.
And so the attitude on the part of those observing probably is doing more harm to themselves than anything else.
Well, you know, if somebody's screwing up and you want them to fail, if they won't take direction, then they might be narcissists, because narcissists doesn't want to be corrected, especially they want to find their own mistakes, but they don't want anyone else to find them. And if they do, they deny them. But if a person truly is incompetent, then they need to have the experience of failure. So they learn something there. You know, I mean, we do that with our own children.
Yeah.
We let them fail so that we can help them understand what the correct behavior is.
Mm. This waking up in 5D, I kind of know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And based upon your response at the beginning of this program as to what the fifth dimension is, where is it?
Mm. It's a vibrational, energy rather than a location.
Okay.
So that's another misnomer. When people go to the fifth dimension, they're actually not going there. They're simply vibrating at another level, kind of like a radio station. Mm. And sometimes we can pick up more than one station. Sometimes we slide into a new station when we're traveling, and it's a little bit like that. So we're actually setting our own vibrational matrix at one level when we're 3D. And the thing is, we're becoming fifth dimensional, and because we're becoming it, and there's all kinds of energies beaming on the planet, and there's subtle energies, there's a photon belt, there's lots of things going on energetically to support our success. So by announcing it, we create a matrix that we fall into. You know, there's that phrase, fake it till you make it. So mm-hmm. when we announce, I want to be fifth dimensional, we actually are faking it till we make it. So we actually put on that template and we surprise ourselves by our behavior and reactions. And that's the first step. When you start to surprise yourself, or you think to yourself, I never reacted so well with that jerk, you know, and you find yourself being supportive or fun or positive. And that's very useful. That's really the first level. And so fifth dimension is the vibrational state that we are all going to. And you might be able to resist, but it's almost like that sign people wear sometimes, resistance is futile, because everything is supporting or moving in that direction. And it's like driving down a dirt road that's got ruts in it. You're going to land in the ruts. You might try to steer out of them, but you're still going to land in them again. And that's, you know, we're all becoming fifth dimensional. We're all going to go there. And wouldn't it be more fun to be proactively there? You could get where you want to go faster. And the other thing is, it's a lot more fun in 5D because we don't have the rules that we have in 3D. The polarity rule says that you have to get the better hand, or I have to get the better hand. In 5D, I'm interested in your success as much as I'm interested in mine. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, you're just as interested in my success as you are in yours.
Yeah.
So the energy is dramatically different. And this, what's cool is that there's a lot of things out there that are already exhibiting this evidence of this energy. For example, a radio show such as yours. Obviously, you're building your audience and you're becoming well-known. You've been doing it for 10 years, but you're also helping people who are out there wanting to get exposure for their ideas and their concepts. And so it's mutually beneficial.
Mm. Well, and the other plus about 5D is you don't need the special glasses like in 3D. You dedicate this book to the dragons who have reappeared on Earth to teach us all, to teach all of us about clarity and help each of us to make the best decisions ever. What are those dragons?
Well, I had, you know, everybody has seen dragons and mythical dragons in, you know, comic books or fantasy art and things like that. And I didn't have much exposure to the dragons at all. One of my kids was fascinated by them, and he had a couple of little statues, but that was all I had any, you know, crossover. It had been years. And I was at an outdoor sculpture park in upstate New York, and there were these huge giant sculptures like Calder's and things like that. It was this amazing acreage. And I looked up in the sky, and there were all these energies that looked like dragons. All these clouds were in these shapes. And I said to the person I was with, that's a dragon. What are the dragons? What are they? What's going on? And I started to get a download about what they were capable of and what they could do. So the word dragon, in every language, the root word means clarity. So the first thing is clarity, to be able to discern what we need to know, what we hear, whether it's BS or whether it's the real deal. And dragons are also helping us with getting where we need to go and having the clarity of direction, even when we're driving. And there's a couple of cute stories in the book about how they actually will clear up heavy duty traffic. And since, you know, you and I are in cities that do get traffic, it's useful to be able to call the dragons to help you. The benefit is that you begin to realize these guys are real. They are totally real. And I would never have thought that. So they first showed up as cloud formations for me, and then they started giving me their information. Now, my experience with clouds is that whenever you see a formation of something that's pretty obvious, now I'm not talking about imaginary stuff that you see, mm-hmm. you make it fit, but you see a pretty obvious shape, that's usually a vibration of a being that's present, because the elementals of the air, the sylphs and the clouds, will copy whatever's going on. So you're actually seeing something. It's almost like you see the shadow of the real thing mm-hmm. in the clouds. Mm. And knowing that, I started asking more questions about what were the dragons, why were they here? And you know, it's funny because it was almost like that first experience with the dragons gave me the curiosity to explore more and to ask them in meditation what's going on. And one of the best stories I have is I was with a friend of mine who is a chiropractor, and he's black, and he is he was on hard times. He had had a job, and they had eased him out, and you know, he was kind of in this feeling sorry for himself space, and yet he's a brilliant guy, and I absolutely adored him. So I said to him, you know, I got to step away for a minute. Here's what I want you to do. And I set it up, and I said, you know, close your eyes, ask for your dragon to show itself, ask the dragon its name, and ask the dragon if you can, you know, see it and see what happens. And I'll be back in a few minutes. I came back, and this 6-foot-4 guy was crying, and he said, I saw my dragon. She is a beautiful, white, iridescent dragon, and she told me her name. And he said, I had no idea that something like that was even possible.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. And I thought it was kind of cute that, I mean, there's all kinds of colors of dragons.
Yeah.
And that he pulled in a white one.
Well, I know that both my wife and I are quite intrigued. We actually found a shower curtain with a giant dragon on it. And so we have it. And it's I don't know. I just find them fascinating. I love watching the various movies that have come out about dragons and mm-hmm. and so forth, Taming Your Dragon and on and on and on.
Uh-huh.
I love some of the voiceover work that has been done. The actors who do the voices. I know Sean Connery has done that. And I'm trying to remember this other fellow's name. I can't recall. He was in a series of movies called Taken 1, 2, and 3 and so forth. But anyway. So dragons are both important to us from a mythical standpoint, but you're obviously adding credence to the reality therein. And you don't have to worry about whether or not other people see those cloud formations as the shapes that you see, because it's what you see that's important. You also are the founder of the Transformational Enterprises. You've also been doing a series, you know, you do all kinds of trainings in 24 different countries. You also have this area also intrigues me, the Akashic Records Guides International. Can mm-hmm. you talk to us a little bit about the Akashic Records? Because I'm not sure if if my library card for the Akashic Records has been renewed yet.
I like it.
Tell me about this.
Well, first of all, it's a good analogy, because one of the things that we often tell people is think of a library, but it's a living library, like that movie where a kid opened a book and suddenly he was in the midst of the action. And
The Neverending Story, I think it was. That's one of them anyway.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Neverending Story. That's correct. So when we work with the Akashic Records, we're actually at the threshold. It's more like a lending library of the resource center rather than the actual books you could take out. So you are thinking about what you want to ask or what you want to know, and then you go to the Akashic Records guides who are working in the library, and they pull that data set for you, and it is made available to you. The fact of the matter is, if you or I, even energetically, if we were to go into the Akashic Records and you saw who murdered you in a past life, or and that you're married to them in this life, for example, that might really upset you. And or if you knew who, you know, you were having a fight with somebody and they killed you in a lifetime, in this lifetime you're still arguing with them, you're going to go, well, that SOB, blah, blah, blah. And suddenly you've changed the energy inside the records. That's why we would never go into the exact records. It is a vibrational state. It's in the 11th dimension. And every once in a while someone says, yeah, but this other teacher says that the Akashic Records are in our DNA. And my response to that is, and this is what the record keepers have said. I shouldn't say it's my response. The record keeper's response to that is, well, that's just the local library. That's not the entire vastness of the data set that exists vibrationally. And it was felt that this data set could be created to have a record of humanity's behavior for the purpose of examining and exploring it. What's interesting is, why would it be open now? Why would it be open for business now? Why would people be allowed to learn how to open their own records and or learn how to help others and open somebody else's records? And the answer is that we're on that cycle where we're going through a huge transition. We're transforming the society from a dog-eat-dog world to a feed-dog-feed-dog world. And we are acquiring knowledge about the motives of people, the understanding of what was behind something or what our choices have been, which allows us to make better choices. And I'll give you one quick example. I had a lady in a class, and one of the things I do is I teach people how to connect with their higher self, and then they ask their higher self a question, and they get an answer, and then they go into the Akashic Records through the process I teach them. So they're actually asking the same question, both of their own higher self and also in the Akashic Records. And her higher self answered this question she was asking about her 35-year-old daughter who was still living at home. Her younger siblings had already moved out. She had a trust fund. She had a car. She had a little job. And yet she was still at home. And the mother could not deal with it. The daughter was fussy about how things were in the kitchen, and it was just not a healthy thing. And so the mother asked, why is my daughter still at home? Or what do I need to know about my daughter being at home? And when she asked her higher self, the answer was that she needed to be more compassionate and patient, and that, things would work out and it would be fine. But she's thinking, yeah, right. And then she went into the Akashic Records, and the Akashic Records showed her that her daughter was afraid to be on her own. Then she felt her daughter's fear. When you feel someone else's fear, you have so much compassion for them. And in her case, she started to cry because she could feel her daughter's fear. Wow. And so she backed off. And in her own energy shifting, everything shifted for both of them. Now, what's even more amazing is then the record keepers told her, and this is something she's transcribing herself to herself, from herself to herself through the Akashic Records, she will always be there for you. And that had not occurred to her, that when she was old and whatever, that mm-hmm. somebody would be looking after her.
Yeah. Wow. So you said earlier, too, that correct me if I misunderstood this, our very looking at the Akashic Records can change them.
Only if you were inside this field. So you don't go into the actual field. You go to the threshold. And that's why I call it like a resource library or a reserve library, where you're not allowed to take the books out, but you're allowed to get the information.
Okay. I understand that now. So this aspect of accessing these records, I know that in previous programs we've talked about the Akashic Records from other folks' perspectives, and it's information that's available, but not everybody knows how to access that information. Are there simple steps that we can learn to do that, or is this something that requires a little bit more training than we really need to discuss here on the program?
It does require a little more training. I have written a book on how to access the records. A person, if you're good at learning from a book, you might be able to do it that way. And there are also other authors who have also written about it. My book, unfortunately, is only published in Chinese so far. My current publisher is still looking at it, making up his mind what he wants to do with it.
With the exception of Waking Up in 5D, the book on Akashic Records is only in Chinese. Is that right?
That's right. My books are published in Chinese, except for Waking Up in 5D. And
may I ask why Chinese? I mean, why only Chinese?
I traveled all these countries.
True.
Well, I've been traveling
to
Asia quite a bit, and I have people who are interested in my work, and so they published my books.
Wow, that's and so now it has to be translated from Chinese into English.
Well, in this case, I have the English version already, and I'm going to, make it even better than the first version was. But you know how that is. I have to get there first.
That's true, yes.
But I also offer classes. I offer online classes on how to open up your Akashic Records. And I do have one coming up in November. It'll be like 4 weekends in November, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was scheduled for one date, and we've got a bunch of conflicts with other things, so we're going to have to move the date. But we're still planning on offering it. So they can take it from me online. I also teach it in New York City. I'll be teaching it the first weekend in December in New York City. So they can get to New York, they can take it. And then I also offer level 2, which allows you to teach others. And then I also offer a network where I help people get started, and I refer clients to them so they can get a good start. And they have a network with me, meaning we have, trainings every month where we share ideas and have information come forth. So that is a tool for people to acquire understanding for the Akashic Records.
And of course, you do have a website, which is MaureenSaintGermain.com. And people can go there to find out more about the work, get in touch with you as far as classes and trainings and so forth. And you're in the Southern California area down in San Diego, correct?
Yes, and I'm also in New York part-time.
And in New York. So coast to coast. You're covered, folks. She's coast to coast, specifically online. And, of course, we're very thankful that she's been able to share with us so much time here on the program. I do want to thank you for this time, and this has been great. We've covered a lot of ground, and then yet there's still so much more yet to cover. So we'd love to invite you not only to come back on the program to continue our conversation, but should you find your way northward to Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
That would be fun, and I would be thrilled to do that. Thank you. I also have an Ascension Institute, which is a year-long program that people can participate in and really deepen their connection and their mastery at this stuff, this deep spiritual awareness.
In terms of this waking up in 5D, I keep repeating the title of the book, for lack of a better description. Is this something that may naturally happen in our evolutionary process, or is this something that you would behoove us to do to go through this process of living in the fifth dimension in these times?
Yes, to all of the above. It's a bit like driver's ed or learning to walk. Even when a baby starts to learn to walk, the parents are right there, playing with the baby, letting the baby walk between the two parents, and falling and being caught by the parents. So they get practice, they get in encouragement, and that's what this book is. It allows you to be proactive and ahead of the curve, because everyone's in the game, and you may as well be at the front of the line instead of at the back of the line. And it doesn't mean that you're going to be better than anyone else. It simply means you're going to be able to help others.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Maureen St. Germain, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. And before I let you go, a reminder that her website is Maureen St. Germain, MaureenSt.Germain.com. We encourage you to go to that website. We will be linked to your website as well, so people can find out more about Waking in the Fifth in 5D. Again, a practical guide to multidimensional transformation. And before I let you go, as I do with all of my guests, three final questions for you. The first is, who is Maureen St. Germain?
I've been called a practical mystic by many people, mostly people who know me well. And I am a mother of 4, a woman who has done it all. I've had a farm. I've lived in New York City. I've been fired a bunch of times. So I'm a real person that's had real experiences. I'm an authentic human being choosing to be as honest with myself and with life that I can.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to help others be the best they can be, no question there. And I consider that my life mission.
And to my final question, what is your life's purpose?
I beat you to it. I'm psychic,
yes, you did.
Too.
Well, and a lot of times throughout the interview, the course of the interview, my guests usually answer these questions along the way, but I like to put the questions to them directly in that regard, and so we go there. But again, I thank you so much for this time. Maureen St. Germain has been my guest. That is also the website with a .com at the end. And we've been talking throughout the program on and off about waking up in 5D. And again, we thank you so much for the time.
My pleasure. Have a day of heaven on earth for you and everyone you come in contact with.
And you the same. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.